Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devam sarasvatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirayat. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati uttama shloke. Bhaktir bhavati naistaki. Tadarajas tamo bhavo. Kamalo badayaschaye. Chete taranavidam. Stita sattvam prasidati. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Ete chamsa sakapumsam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. Indrari Vyakalam Lokam. Vridyanti Yugay Yugay. Try. All of these incarnations are either portions or portions of portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhood. But the Supreme Personality is Krishna, who incarnates again and again to destroy the demons whenever they are threatening Indra. God. Shrimad Bhagavatam in Spanish, cinco, 5, 5, 31, right? Yeah, okay. Okay. And it's a lot of Sanskrit prose, I won't read it all. Ati Sukumara Kara Charanoraha. Stala Vipula Bahamsagala. Lord Rishabhdev's hands, feet, chest were very long. Got that? His hands, his feet, and his chest. Wow. His shoulders, face, and limbs were all very delicate and symmetrically proportioned. His mouth was beautifully decorated with a natural smile, and he appeared all the more lovely with his reddish eyes, spread wide like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower, covered with dew in the early morning. The irises of his eyes were so pleasing that they removed all the troubles of everyone who saw him. His forehead, ears, neck, nose, and all other features were very beautiful. His gentle smile always made his face beautiful. Mm. So much so that he attracted the hearts of married women. Mm. It was as though they had been pierced by arrows of Cupid. About his head was an abundance of curly, matted, brown hair. His hair was disheveled because his body was dirty. His hair was disheveled because his body was dirty and not taken care of. He appeared as if he was haunted by a ghost. God. Suppose purport. Although Rishabhdev's body was very much neglected, his transcendental features were so attractive that even married women were attracted to him. His beauty and dirtiness combined to make his beautiful body appear as though it were haunted by a ghost. That's kind of strange, you know, right? His beauty and dirtiness made his beautiful body appear as if it was haunted by a ghost. So how could his beauty make it appear as if it was haunted by a ghost? I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Comments? I don't know. That's kind of a strange verse to comment on. You know? course, this is the incarnation of Krishna. Krishna's come for a certain purpose, to show the pathway of severe austerities, like Narayan, you know, so the pathway of austerities. I can read more verses, or are we? I'm limited to one verse. I don't know. It's so kind of fixed already, huh? Yeah. I think it's fixed. Huh? Oh, nope, it's flexible. Okay, so I'll read some more verses then. Yarhi vava sa bhagavan lokamimam. When Lord Vrishabhdev saw that the general populace was very antagonistic to his execution of mystic yoga, he accepted the behavior of a python in order to counteract their opposition. Thus he stayed in one place and lay down. While lying down, he ate and drank and passed stool and urine and rolled in it. Indeed, he smeared his whole body with his own stool and urine so that opposing elements might not come and disturb him. What was Kijaya? Purport. According to one's destiny, one enjoys a lot of happiness and distress, even though one keeps himself in one place. This is the injunction of the Shastras. When one is spiritually situated, he may stay in one place, and all his necessities will be supplied by the arrangement of the Supreme Controller. Ishavasham idam sarvam yakincha jagat yam jagat tinatiyaktena bunjitaha magarada kashvasvedanam. Unless one is a preacher, there is no need to travel all over the world. A person can stay in one place and execute devotional service suitably according to time and circumstance. When Rishabhdev saw that he was simply being disturbed by traveling throughout the world, he began to decide to lie down in one place like a python. Thus he ate and drank, and he passed stool and urine and smeared his body with them so that people would not disturb him. Chanika Pandit says that the tall, straight trees are the first ones to get cut down. So it's better to look a little bit incompetent in one's ordinary dealings. Yeah. So same way. Yeah. This is a pretty much universal fact that for people who are antagonistic, who are not serious, then acharyas, then they manifest a certain kind of form that will deal with that, and people won't bother them anymore. You know? But people who are more intelligent, who are more advanced, then they can recognize this. You know? There's a story about, is it called Babaji? No, not Babaji. It's the other one. It's about Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji by, who's it? He just finished off Bhakti Bhai Baba. He just finished off Bhakti Bikash Maharaj, yeah. Bhakti Bikash Maharaj. He did a biography. He interviewed because Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji, he's on our calendar, but he's not in our parampara. But when he was manifest, if you saw him, you'd think he was just some madman. He was kind of tall, but he didn't cut his hair. He was always talking to himself like that. Wouldn't talk to anybody. And so he looked like some kind of crazy fellow, you know. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and the Radharaman Goswamis, they kept, you know, brahmacharis with him to serve him, to travel with him. And as I understand, there were maybe like two cooks, two servants, two or three, who had accompanied him from his village like that. I guess they knew him from when he grew up or something. So his process was he would just kind of wander here and there and sit down one place, and they had a tent they would put up around him, a small tent. It's big enough for himself, basically. And he had a deity of Gopal, like, you know, Ladu Gopal. He would just carry him. He would get up, start walking, and carry the deity in his hand. And everybody else would, you know, put the tent together and head off behind him. And then some brahmacharis from Bhaktisiddhanta and Radharaman were staying with him. So Bhakti Vikash Maharaj interviewed one of them or something like that, or more people like that, to write the book. So he wouldn't talk to anybody, pretty much. You know, just nobody, you know. We'd spend all day talking to Gopal about things. What do you think about Radhadesh, the guys there? Well, yeah, I thought the same thing. Yeah, you know, I really, that doesn't, you know. Yeah.
And then somebody would come and ask him, Maharaj, what about this and that, this and that? And he would just tell Gopal, he would say, yeah, this idiot's asking this question. If he would just look in Bhagavad Gita 5:35, he'd find his answer. So he was apparently crazy. And he never chanted Jap or anything else. And when Brahmacharya said he was with him for like 3 months, he never saw him eat or drink. He never saw him bathe. Well, we never saw him pass stula urine one time or bathe. And he was with him all the time. So in 3 months, he didn't see him bathing or passing stula urine one time. And after maybe a few days, he would just decide to cook for Gopal. He would cook halava, everything else like that. And then after that, there'd be remnants like that, And so that was his whole activity. He was always just talking about, talking to Gopal about things, and always very Krishna conscious. And Bhakti said, and then the remnants then, the brahmacharis, whatever remnants there were, they would take those back for Bhaktisiddhanta and the Radharaman Goswamis to take like that. So accept him as a great, great Paramahamsa. But he wasn't preaching. He was just kind of going here and there. He was traveling a fair amount, but basically for his own internal purposes like that. He got the name Bhansi Gopal because one time a very famous flute player was going to be playing in the village, down where he was staying. And Gopal was crying. He said, what are you crying about? And he said, oh, because everybody can go to this flute concert, but I can't go. The guy is a really good flute player, and I won't be able to hear him. He said, oh, okay. So he went down and talked to the guy, said, my Gopal. Gopal said he wants to hear you, like that. And Gopal? Yeah, Gopal. So finally, I understood the guy was talking about his deity. He was talking to his deity. And he thought he was kind of crazy, but local people said, no, Baba's very advanced. And if he says Gopal says that, then probably he does. And so it's a great honor if you can go play. And you have some time? And the guy said, well, yeah, actually, we're not performing these days, so we can go, So they went up there, and some other people came, and maybe like 20 people. And the Gopal was inside the hut, shack, cottage, what do you call it? And then the guy started playing, and the tabla players are going along. And after some time, they hear the second flute playing, So the guy stops, and the second flute stops like that. Look at Gopal, and Gopal is sitting there like this, So they start again playing, and it happens again like that, So three times or something, when the guy was playing, this other flute was coming like that, very nice, So then Bhansi Das Babaji got the name, Bhansi Das. Yeah, Bhansi Gopal, for the Gopal who plays the flute. So he became Bhansi Das Babaji. Another time he was in Nabadweep, and he was staying there for some time, and it was a shack, the same size he could live in, he could sleep in, but it was more solid like that, out of something solid, and it was locked or something. But one time when he was gone, some thieves, they broke the lock, and they went inside, and he also had Gaudatai deities. And the servants would carry those when he was traveling, walking. But the one time some thieves broke in, they stole his pots, cooking pots, like that, So he came back and he accused Gaudatai of taking the pots and selling them to buy sweets, like that, And he wouldn't cook for them until they confessed, So after about, 1 week, Nityananda confessed. It was true, yes, we did that. But it wasn't my idea. Like that. It was Nimai's idea. So he cooked for Nityananda, but he wouldn't cook for Nimai until he also finally confessed also. Okay, like that. So, this is how Rishabhdev appeared, like that. The same way Bhansi Das Babaji, if you saw him, probably most of us look at the guy, he's talking to himself like that, But he had to listen. He had to penetrate, to what he's talking about. And after a while, you probably saw it was quite Krishna conscious. Another time, for example, I was on the altar in the temple in San Francisco, Berkeley. It's like a little bigger than this, And right after the Sandhyartik, the Gaurartik, the pujaris go on and change the clothes and have the deities ready for the Sandhyartik. So we were up there, and I think what happens, it was the three of us, we were working, and there was nobody giving class, but all of a sudden the microphone started moving and this and that, and then, Om Vajyanata Vyvandas, And then Dan Sowers, he was like just some guy who visited the temple. He was a little bit mentally disturbed, like that. Not a lot, but a little bit. Compulsive kind of guy, absorbed. His mental processes were a little absorbed in things like that. And so he started talking, you know. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you're a sannyasi, it's very easy to realize him like that. He's not concerned about what he's wearing, hot and cold, happiness and distress. You know, sometimes Krishna was looking at, you know, some of the demons with very pointed eyes like that, and criticizing them being like black snakes and so on, you know. And Charnamrita is like really not wonderful. It comes from Krishna's lotus feet. If we take that, we become purified of simple reactions. And sometimes Krishna plays with his friends and they put flowers like this. It was just like one totally disconnected thing after another, after another, after another, after another. So we're listening to this being broadcast, and I kind of looked at other pujaris, he looked at me, and we all kind of like, okay, it's, you know, it's all Krishna conscious, like that, but it had no connection, you know. So finally, after I finished dressing the deities, I went outside and was sitting there, and he was sitting there, and the temple's near Telegraph Avenue, which goes right to the campus. It's full of all kinds of coffee shops. It's one of the most cultured places in the world in terms of all this intellectual, mental culture, but very radical also, revolutionary ideas and all this kind of stuff. You know? So anyway, he'd set the whole thing up like this, was sitting there talking, and there were two boys and one girl listening. And I knew them. They were crazy too. They were from Telegraph Avenue. They come sometimes, take prasad, see the devotees like that, you know. And you can see he was watching them. Their attention span was just about as long as his presentation. You know, they would kind of look at the picture, and he would talk about Krishna. You see, they kind of shift over to the picture like that. He'd talk about Charnamrita, and go over to somebody else. He'd talk about people from India. You know, and he was just matching their attention span like that and stuff. Very, very naturally like that. You know, yeah. So there are all kinds of people in this world. You know. And but if you listen, right, you see that there's, you know, the person's talking about Krishna. Then beyond that, you can begin to see there's a certain logic in why he's doing it. You know, Dan was moving because he was keeping up with his audience, his sacred audience. That's why he was changing. He was focusing on what they were looking at and stuff like that. You know, so Vamsidas Babaji, if you get into it, probably you see his talking about things is following a certain rasa, certain feelings, certain ideas like that. And sometimes he would ask his disciples to read Rupa Shiksha, or Sanatana Shiksha. So he knew, like, the scriptures and stuff, you know, like that. So Rishabhdev is an example of this. He's a very classical example. And he's experiencing some problems with his preaching, and maybe he's done his preaching at home. You know, when he takes off, there's no description of his actually preaching like that, you know, unlike Jada Bharat or others like that, or Sukadeva Goswami, you know. They preach to Paramahamsas. Prabhupada's giving one time, he's walking in Vrindavan, and he has the famous Varna Ashram Dharma conversations for about 5 days, I think. And they're asking, because Prabhupada says, we have to establish a Varna Ashram college to teach people how to, you know, do these things like that. And he just begins to describe everything, what the Shudras can do, what people can do. The Kshatriyas, they can own some apartment houses and rent them out and keep peace amongst their tenants like that. You know? What do the Brahmins do? Well, the Brahmins can preach to enlightened people, like that, you know? The Brahmins can preach to enlightened people, you know, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, like that, so on, you know? So sometimes they're preaching to Shudras, but in generally the Shudras, they would understand from the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas. They tell them what to do, get them engaged, explain things to them, like that. And they would go with their masters only to these sacrifices and these lectures and stuff like that, you know, to understand things properly. But it's described that the brahmanas, or other people were arranging for puppet shows and those kind of things. And so then people could understand. The common people could see a little drama, and they would remember the idea like that, the story, something would be funny like that. You know? So everybody was there. But in probably saying the same thing, that the brahmanas, generally speaking, are talking to people who are more enlightened, kshatriyas, vaishyas, about the philosophy and culture like that. You know? So, it's a good example. Rishabhdev is showing us, you know, one incarnation. If you haven't got problems, you can just sit down one place and chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says you can just go down by the river, take four poles from the forest, and you know, put them in the ground, take some vines and wrap it up, put some leaves on it, plant a tulsi plant, and sit down and chant Hare Krishna. Like that. And then Krishna, who supplies everybody's food, will arrange that everything will come that you need like that. If he doesn't arrange, okay, he wants me to fast. You know? Yeah, after 4 or 5 days or 2 months, okay, he wants me to leave my body. Okay. Yeah. Very nice. You know. We're praying for people who are having surgery that they won't die, right? But it's kind of like a curse, isn't it? If they die, what's going to happen? Where are they going to go? Devotees. Probably someplace good. It'd be better than here. And we're saying, no, don't leave us. Stay here. What is? Stay in Marchaloka with us and suffer. You know? So, I just think like that. But you know, if they die, it's great. If they don't die, they stay here and they preach, you know, with us. You know, for a devotee, there's no loss, right? Live or die, it's the same thing for a devotee. Yeah, but okay, maybe we're not as advanced as Rishabhdev. We're not ready to smear our stool and urine over ourselves like that. So okay, then maybe we need an auspicious situation for developing spiritual life like that. You know? So that's kind of all I was thinking. Anybody else have any comments about the activities, the bodily features? I think Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji, if you looked at him, actually, you know, he had this afro kind of thing like that, but he was actually you know, attractive in that sense. He's healthy and everything. Yes? Yeah. As far as I understand, you know, it's in the mode of ignorance, things are really fixed. The mode of passion, you see choices, but it's hard to take them. The desires are strong. In the mode of goodness, you actually have real choices like that about what you can do. And that's when you create your karma. Otherwise, if everything's fixed forever, and you aren't creating any karma. You're not responsible for anything. You know, how did you get the karma in the first place? You know? So in the mode of goodness, there's actually opportunity to make decisions. Krishna says, what do you want to do? Again, I was coming off the altar, same thing. But now one pujari didn't show up, so two of us had to do the work of three pujaris. You couldn't deal with Krishna in a very, like, you know, nice fashion. You had to go quickly and everything else. So I came off the altar feeling agitated. Other pujari was going to do the last artik. And I was going to go to the prasadam room and drown my sorrows in the halaba for the last offering, you know. But then the telephone rang, you know. Ring, you know, outside in the lobby. So somebody said, oh, Maharaj, it's a phone call for you. Somebody, I knew the person. He was, you know, probably asking some philosophical thing. So I was praying to Krishna when I was going to the prasadam. Oh, please help me. I can't control my senses. I'm going to eat too much. I won't get up in the morning properly. You know? And then I felt, oh, Krishna arranged this, you know, because now I had some engagement so I could, like, you know, control my senses, you know? So, halaba, 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 telephone, halaba, telephone, halaba, telephone. You know, it was like, you know, Krishna made it within my range of choices, you know, like that. So I was choosing now. I actually had free will within, you know, a certain range like that. But yeah, I could determine what my future is going to be. So that's how I chose the telephone. There, talked to the guy. He bought a full set of Chaitanya Charitamritas. Went back into prasadam, and there was like this much halava left and one tulsi leaf. So okay. I felt a little hungry, but I got up in the morning nice, chanted my rounds and stuff like that. You know? So the mode of goodness, these opportunities are there, you know. Even specifically, one devotee, he was an astrologer, still is, and pretty good. So this was a long time ago, and he did a chart for one of the ladies, the girls, Brahmacharinis. And he told me that he did it for her, and about maybe 3 years in the future, she had this really heavy influence of Rahu and Mercury and stuff like that, Saturn. And he told her, it's almost, you know, guaranteed you're going to have a pregnancy outside of marriage, like that, you know? And even though you know it, you're ready for it, this is the day, everything else, I'm not going to go out, I'm not even going to look at a man, you know, bong, I forgot the postman, you know, yeah. So he said, it's like that. He said, if you try your best, but don't feel ashamed or something if you can't avoid it, because it's just like, I've never seen such strong karma, you know. But afterwards, there's a lot of influence of Mars and this and that, Saturn. So afterwards, you'll feel a strong desire to have an abortion. That's optional. Don't do it. Yeah? Yeah? So that was a karma there. She was kind of fixed because of something she'd done to somebody else, like that. She was fixed to go through this experience of having an illegitimate child. But then, better to go through it. You know? Maybe that child is somebody specific who you have an obligation to. Yeah? And now you get a chance to pay it off. You know, if you kill them, you do something even worse. You know, so okay, so don't, you know, so the karma was there, but there were choices like that. Yeah. So I understand. Yeah. Hamlet comes to the same conclusion. Hamlet's ghost, you can tell, you have a puppet show, not puppet show, PowerPoint show of Hamlet and Arjuna in Spanish. And we could not find a good translation of Hamlet in Spanish. We had big professors helping us, really good bookstores, everything. And they would drop phrases or it was a weak translation, you know. For example, translate this into Spanish. You're erudite, you're a master's degree in something. This is the beginning of Romeo and Juliet. In fair Verona, where we lay our scene, two families, both alike in dignity, from ancient grudge break forth to new mutiny, and civil blood makes civil hands unclean. Oh, maybe Cervantes could do it. Cervantes and Shakespeare died the same year. Yeah, there's one master's thesis that they were the same person. People thought, this is crazy. Cervantes and Shakespeare the same year. They died the same, you know, same person. He did all this modern linguistic analysis, computer analysis, and it came back with spooky results like that. You know? So maybe they were being inspired by the same Gandhara or something like that. You know? Anyway, but, so we finally worked on this for a long time when we got a good translation like that. You know, I had to explain what fair meant. You know, fair Verona. A girl may be fair, but not beautiful. You know? So it's like we finally got something. We did it at Ricardo Palma, our university, and good professors were there, linguistic people, other people. And one person said it was the best PowerPoint he'd ever seen in his life. And that all the linguists were going through and asking who translated, and they said, it's very nice, you know. So these are the most intense books in the English and Oriental worlds, Bhagavad Gita and Hamlet, you know, real cultural icons. So Hamlet's problem is that the ghost of his father is coming and finally convinces him that it's his ghost. And he didn't die a natural death. He's coming back from Paris, from education, for his father's funeral, who he loves so much. He's very much like the Lion King. So his uncle, who's kind of a rascally guy, incompetent, whatever, cowardly, has then become the king because his brother died. And then his father's young bride has then married this guy like that. How quickly after the funeral, the cooked meats for the funeral feast did but do double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast. Like that, yeah. He was barely dead in the ground and she was already in bed, you know. And the play, the queen, and then the drama, he's trying to see his mother, how she reacts to this, you know. So the young queen in the drama says, well, I'll never marry you again. I know you're going to die, you know. They say that if ever a woman kisses a second man in bed, she kills the first one twice. Like that. Really intense. We had a professional actress, one devotee, you know, trying to say this. I was playing the part, so she couldn't do it. It was so intense like that. If ever a second husband kisses me in bed, I kill the first one twice. Like that. Wow. So it's really interesting, because as I was doing it, I was realizing that some of the girls there that had been were remarried. Oh my God. Because you know, it was heavy about remarriage and stuff like that. So Shakespeare has a lot of intense things about Varna Ashram. Hansa Duda told us that Prabhupada said you can teach it in the Gurukula. So we can have a thing on classical literature. Because it is, it's wonderful for preaching. You see, it's like you have this now. And again and again people are asking for it in universities and stuff. So he had to revenge his father by killing his uncle. And chastising his mother in very strong language, things you wouldn't say to your mother. He had to tell her how she was acting. So he didn't want to do it. Time is out of joint. Oh, cursed spite, that I was ever born to set it right. You know? Then you match it up with Arjuna like that. Why am I faced, oh Keshava, with this responsibility of killing my own family members? Right? Yeah. To die, to sleep. Yeah, perchance to dream. How's it go? No, to die, to sleep. Perchance to dream. Yeah, to die. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. How's it go? Before that. Thank you. Before that. Oh, yeah. That is the question. Oh, yeah. That. To be or not to be, yes, that is the question. Whether it is nobler to take arms against the sea of Kauravas, right, and by opposing in them, or to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Ah, there's the rub. For who knows what dreams may come after we have shuffled off this mortal coil. Gives pause to reflection. And the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with a paler cast of thought. You know? I would count myself king of infinite space, bound up in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams. Oh, this is why, you know, great poet. You know, he's considered, you know, the greatest poet in the English language and maybe in many languages like that. Kalidas, of course, is a competitor. You know. But Prabhupada said this is word power, you know, Shakespeare, how to put a thing like that. So same thing, Arjuna and Hamlet, right? They're both faced with their destiny. They don't want to do it. Hamlet tries to avoid it. He thinks, well, maybe the ghost is lying. He puts the whole drama on, you know, to see his uncle's reaction, his mother's reaction. And sure enough, his uncle flips out, you know, because the murder was reenacted the way the ghost said it happened. So, okay, it's confirmed he did it, you know. And then, he tries to avoid it. Then his uncle tries to kill him, you know. But the assassins get killed instead. He goes on a boat to leave Denmark. He gets tossed off the boat, and the waves take him back up. Like that. So one thing after another, and so many wonderful things in terms of our philosophy, Varna Ashram. We bring out maybe five points in the PowerPoint show. It's parallel, you know. And some contrast, too, you know. So finally, his conclusion is, talking to his friend Horatio, there is a destiny, you know, rough cut, rough hewn though it may be, you know. It may be cut a little bit roughly like that, right? But all of us have a destiny. And all we can do is participate in that destiny the best we can, play it the best way we can, like that, so on. So he says that it may be a little bit roughly cut. You know, maybe your destiny is to get, I don't know, 3,000, what's it, 2,000 euros a month, okay? That's your destiny. And you can push it to 2,300, you know? And if you kind of space out or something, you can mess up, you can drop it down to 1,700. But you can't, I've seen so many big people, you know, here and there, ambassadors, chancellors, like that and stuff. And many times they are incompetent fools, you know? And you can see it, they're just incompetent fools, you know? But they have this karma, you know? One president of the United States recently, every week they had all the stupid things he said on one television show, and it became so frightening that the sponsors of the TV show stopped presenting it. And he was president of the United States. You know? Richard Nixon told the press one time, one reporter was becoming a little bit aggressive, a younger guy, like challenging and like that. You know, he kind of stopped and he said, "You don't know who I am, do you?" And the guy said, "What do you mean?" You know, he said, "I can go in the next room and make one phone call, and within 45 minutes, 640 million people will be dead." Mr. President, another question if you might ask. Yeah. But this is guy, how did he get the job? He was proven to be a thief, everything else. Karma. What he says, it works. People just do it, you know. The influence is there, you know, like that. You know? So, but Hamlet's conclusion is the same thing. It may be roughly cut. Prabhupada says by 50 years old, this is karma, this is a universal karma. By 50 years old, the energy in your body is finished, like that. He said, maybe you can push it to 55, like that. So I remember that. I was maybe about, when I read that, it was in the Bhagavatam, maybe like 50 or 51. And I could see, yeah, my psychic energy to be able to focus my mind on things and make plans and do all this kind of stuff. The physical energy, yeah, but even the psychic energy starts. You get headaches and so on. So I pushed it to maybe like about like 55, and it was just, I couldn't do it anymore, you know. All the disciples coming, Maharaj, this and that, and this and that. You know, you can have experience, you can judge things, you can give advice. But after a while, I realized this was exhausting, you know. So every now and again, I would deal with somebody's telenovela, their soap opera, and help them as kind of an example. But in general, I tell them, you got to ask other people, and so on like that, you know. So we have our karma, you know. Yeah. Most people here, if you live long enough, I can tell you, everybody here, your teeth are going to fall out. We're starting. Yeah. Look in the mirror today. You know? Yeah, suck it back like this, you know. Yeah. We come into this world as toothless suckers, and we go out as toothless suckers. And in between, we make everything complicated. So this, my karma is there. And find out what it is. This is important for a devotee. Find out what your karma is, your nature. And then, okay, this Baba says, do it for Krishna. You know, not dog hard. Do something for Krishna that you can do with your nature. Just not dog hard, nicely. And as much as you can, engage in hearing and chanting. Because that's more flexible. That's where Maya has some flexibility like that. She can't control that so easily. So that's where we should push. You know, Prabhupada says, if you try and follow Raghunath Das, today is his Samadhi day, his austerities, you won't become pious, you'll become sinful like that. You know, you can't do this. You know, so try and, you know, control your sleeping and eating, you know, within the range of your karma, but really try and engage in hearing and chanting, increasing in that. Read three or four pages from Chaitanya Charitamrita before you do the Noon Aartik. You know, read a little bit Lilamrita before you eat, right? You find some rhythm like that, you know? Everybody has their way of hearing and chanting, but increase it. And then Prabhupada says automatically your eating and sleeping will decrease. He gives the example of a snake. He said, you try and pull the skin off of a snake, he will complain. He may even say something like that, trying to pull his skin off, you know? But, he said, if you wait once a year, just naturally, it comes off like that. He molts and it comes off like that. So naturally, if we increase our hearing and chanting, automatically our eating and sleeping will start to diminish like that, you know, regulated and so on. So that's where, the chink in Maya's armor is Shravanam Kirtanam. That's where she has a real weak point. That's where we push on that, according to our flexibility, our karma, you know. And the Prabhupada says that Nanda Maharaj could not read or write. He was a Vaishya. He would hire some educated fool to do it for him, like that. Yeah, software engineer, like that. Yeah. And so Prabhupada says then, what to speak of the girls? You know, Prabhupada says like that. What to speak of the girls? You know, reading and writing. The gopis couldn't read and write. But they would go to lectures and stuff by Brahmins. They would see puppet shows and they would understand everything. Prabhupada said they understood everything about the universe, Vishnu, like that, in terms of their own particular situation, you know, so on. But their job was always to think about Krishna, you know, somehow or other. You know? Yeah. So, you know, just karma, you know. And whatever you have, it will come, your destiny. Even as a devotee, why should Krishna change it, you know? Before you're, you know, you're under the control of Maya, she's pulling all the cords, you know, like this, whatever. Look at what you've done, the karma, here's a reaction. But when you start to be good, and then, you know, your mother tells the nanny, okay, little Buford's being good now, let him come and stay with me, you know, okay. So you go with your mother, and then the nanny tells him, this is what he had for lunch, this is what he's done, this and that, you know. So the Durga passes the karma to Radha. Yeah? But now then she can, you know, use it as she wants to. She can manipulate it for our spiritual benefit. You know, Buddhimanta, great Sankirtan devotee. First person to distribute 100 big books in one day, like that. He did that in Los Angeles. He would go out every day in the parking lots in Los Angeles, these big shopping malls. You know, 200, 300 cars like that. Hot sun, asphalt, car to car, stopping people. And his diet was one tub of sour cream, as you call it here, like nata, you know, pure cream, and one jar of peanut butter, and one head of cauliflower, raw. That was his Sankirtan diet. And he was fired up like that. Yeah. That's a Kshatriya's model. Motto of a Kshatriya is live fast, die young, and have a good-looking corpse. Right? Yeah. Better to be one day as a lion than 100 years as a lamb. You know, yeah, these mottos, you know. Yeah. Kill them all. Kill them all, let God sort them out. Right? Kill them all, let God figure out where they go. Yeah, when one devotee was a book distributor, he said, you know, approaching everybody, he said, my motto is, kill them all and let the gopis figure out where they go. Just distribute books to everybody and let, you know, the gopis figure out who's going to read them. You know? Yeah. So he wanted to take karate lessons. You know, he was there with Hansa Dutta. His whole was wild. When Hansa Dutta was in Berkeley Temple, he fit right into Berkeley, man. He was had his cowboy boots, everything else like that. He was out of dudes, you know. So anyway, Buddhimanta came there. He was our Sankirtan leader. He gave us Sankirtan lectures right after Mangalartik. Today is the marathon. You know, he would have been like a, you know, disappeared in his effulgence like that compared to his Sankirtan lecture. You know, he would get up there and, you know, screaming and yelling. He would beat on this drum like that. And I was in the treasury room, which is like, you know, clear the other side of the temple behind two doors. And it was still, I had to cover my ears like that. He would break the plastic murdungas, the rubber murdungas, he would break those like that, beating on them like that. You know, it was like, okay, yeah, we're fired up. You know. So anyway, he wanted to take karate lessons. You know. So he said, okay, you can go, but go with Hanuman Swami. You know. And yeah, I knew all these karate schools in the area. I kind of chant my rounds and brahmachari, go look at them. You know. So he went to different schools, this one, that one. I took him to a Tai Chi place. You know. He watched for about 2 minutes and looked at me and said, oh, forget it. You know. So he went to a Taekwondo place, you know. Like this. He said, yeah, that's it. So, and the instructor's name was Roger Bliss. It's like that. And he just loved Booty like that. You know, he just really liked him and teaching him, you know. So one time after working out, you know, like that, we're driving back to the temple in this old Hare Krishna car. He was driving. He said, wait a second, you know, I'm thirsty, you know. So he pulled right in front of this liquor store. And I went, what's he doing? You know? He ran inside, and he came out with this ice-cold bottle of 7-Up, but 1 liter, ice-cold. He said, yeah, they got a really cold refrigerator in there. And I said, okay. Everybody knows what they know. So he showed me. He said, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, like that, you know. He drank the entire thing in one breath, like that. Bloop, 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 bloop. Bloop, 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 bloop. Yeah, yeah. And you can imagine what happens when that much carbonation and sugar and ice hits your stomach, you know, like that, you know? Yeah. Actually, practically speaking, the body goes into these reactions that, it, you know, it would kill you, but the body leaches all this calcium out of your bones or something to try and compensate for what you've done. Otherwise, that sugar would cause an attack and you'd drop dead, you know? So he finished the whole thing off and he said, you know, if I hadn't become a devotee, this would have been beer, like that. So there's again, like that. Krishna adjusted his karma a little bit, you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah. Krishna needs some sentimental, soft-headed ladies, like that. It's nice to have a few soft-headed, sentimental ladies in the temple who will listen to you when you're, and really care about people and don't care about how, you know. Yeah, you know, some mothers, you know. Krishna needs mothers. Krishna needs live fast, die young, kshatriyas. Buddhimanta died about 38 years old of brain cancer. Okay, yeah. Yeah, because that was the life he was living, you know. But he probably distributed more, I don't know how many books he distributed, but you know, the first day when he distributed 100 books, he came back from the parking lot like that. And the secretary was there. He said, Prabhu, I have to tell Prabhupada something. And I distributed all these books. He said, Prabhu, Prabhupada said he wants to be not disturbed right now. He has to write. No, I got to tell him it's important. You can't go in, Prabhu. And he jumped over the table like that. Prabhupada's writing. He said, what is it? What do you want? He said, so Prabhupada, I just distributed 100 of your big books. And he said, Prabhupada was this, eyes got big. He was looking for some gift. There was no gift. He took his shirt off and gave it to him and said, thank you, like that, you know, God, yeah. So, probably gave his shirt off his back to him, you know. So, okay, you know, you have your, and again, he didn't change, even as a devotee, Krishna didn't change his karma that much, you know. He left him in this, he adjusted a little bit, because why? Because how are you going to communicate to us if suddenly you have a really different karma and body? You're trying to communicate a message, you know. Krishna is. So he left it within the range where he could understand, yeah, you get out there, you jack the people up, you get the books out, you come back, you eat a lot of prasad, you sleep with an electric heater on your head, like that, and get out the next day, you know, like that. Then after some time you go to Mayapur and relax, you know. But you do it for Krishna, you know, like that. You know? And he was very Krishna conscious. I remember I was there at the very end in Vrindavan. And he could barely talk. He was lying in bed like that. He had bed sores and everything, you know. So I would come and read the Bhagavatam. I would come in the morning and chant some rounds there. Then I would do Guru Puja, sing the Guru Puja, so the servant could go. Then I would go for class. So one day I was a little bit late and to get for class. So I kind of went over next to his. He never said anything. He was lying there the whole time. So I went over next to his bed and I said, I'm going to go now, Booty. There's no time for I'm going to go now, Booty. And I didn't have time to do the Guru Puja. But I said, I'm going to go now. And he said, what about Guru Puja? You know, so he said, so the whole time he'd been fully conscious of the whole thing like that. So, oh, okay, yeah. So I chanted like that, you know, for him like that. Yeah. So everybody has their karma, but he's flexible. And then Radharani, she may very much adjust it or give it different opportunities in terms of our devotional career, like that. Okay. Any other questions or comments about Rishabhdev lying down like a python? I'll do that. I will also do that. You know, but your stool and urine, his stool and urine smelled fragrant. For how far? Huh? 80 miles. That was, of course, this is a different yuga. So maybe all the way to Dubai, whatever it is, like that. What is that good smell coming from the petite somme? It is the yogis, you know. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah. The stool. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I was also my. Yeah. My mind was also thinking the same thing. Like that, you know. Yeah. But it said. I think it said it made the air fragrant. So maybe indirectly, maybe up close it didn't. But after it got a little distance away, maybe it changed like that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So many people say that, yeah. The human body is a boat, right? And the sails are senses, like that. And the wind is our karma, and the expert captain is the spiritual master, you know. So he knows how to catch the winds of the karma, which stimulate our senses, right, and then guide the boat in the right direction. I've heard Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, if you have some passion and you don't do it for Krishna, you're a fool. Yeah. So yeah, that's the karma yoga. You know, yeah, just do whatever you can do for Krishna nicely, like that. But don't become obsessed about it, right? A little restraint. Maybe otherwise you should become obsessed with this and that. Right? Okay, you do it for Krishna, and then that will put you in the mode of goodness. Right? Yeah. And then, of course, you can cultivate jnana, go from karma mishra, bhakti yoga, to jnana mishra, bhakti yoga. By doing these things, you start to get wisdom. For example, when I actually moved in the temple full time, I was visiting and reading a book, everything else. The first job I got, Bhaktidas, our president, made me the treasurer. Okay. In the university, you had these personality inventories, you know, these things, you give all these tests, you know. And one of them was occupational interest, you know. You know, scientist, this and that. I had some pretty high scores. My lowest score was banker, like that. And so when I came in here, the first job I got was the treasurer, you know, like that. And I remember, maybe 3 days after being treasurer, because the boys were going out collecting on the street, bringing back all these coins and everything else. So Bhaktidas had this machine, two machines that would sort the coins and put them into bags like that, you know, wrappers. And so all I had to do was put it in the machines. But I remember I was sitting there up in the treasury room, a small little room like that, I'm sitting on the floor, like looking at these buckets of unsorted money, just staring at them, sitting on the floor, you know. And the kirtan was going on for the Sunday feast down below, and I was staring, you know. And then the lecture was going on, and I was staring. And then the kirtan went on again, I was staring, and the feast was distributed. And I was just going through my mind. I just had no motivation whatsoever, you know. Nobody was paying me, you know. And so my mind was going through all this stuff. Why should I do this, you know? And so finally, I really got it worked out over and over again. You know, temple president is authorized by Prabhupada. Prabhupada is authorized by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya can reveal Krishna to us. It's like, I finally worked it out intellectually that, yeah, I should do this, you know. So then I kind of like, you know, because this wasn't my nature, you know. And also I was thinking too, Krishna did this, you know, because I knew that what I was doing was bhakti, you know. I wasn't doing it because I liked to do it, you know, for Krishna and enjoying the results, you know. So it's like jnana, you come to that level, even though it's not your, maybe it's not your nature to do your job, right? But you understand, really understand, your intelligence is really satisfied, this has to be done. I've been many times in that position. I didn't like, but I did. And even I didn't do it very well, you know. I had to eat too much or, you know, or something like that to do the job, you know. I mean, oh, wait, what was that? There's nothing bad. But, yeah, you have to go and eat a lot of prasadam to go back to the office and do this kind of work. It's just not, you're not an administrator, you know, you're a carpenter, like a woodworker, you know. Yeah. So, but you realize there's nobody else to do it. Okay, this is okay. This is part of the job. Okay, I do it, you know. Okay?
At the beginning of the answer, you indicated that if I get it that way, the proper way is to do the guru and give direction.
As long as you're on the karma yoga level, but from karma yoga, then you go to jnana yoga, and you understand clearly what's happening, the philosophy. Then you can control your senses by your wisdom, like that. And then one devotee came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, how can I advance in devotional service? Prabhupada looked at him and said, by eating less. But Prabhupada, 1 year ago, you told me to eat a lot. You told me to eat a lot of prasadam. So you followed my instructions then. Why are you not following now? So he's seeing, okay, now the guy's ready. Because now he understands. He's got some perspective like that, you know? Yeah. So you say, okay, Prabhupada, I'll do it. That's right, Prabhupada. I should pull my senses in. Yeah. I like my service. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So my last question here. Yeah. Or comment. Huh? Yeah. No, or yes. I mean, it depends again. If Krishna wants you to do that, right? Basically, it comes down what's going to please Krishna, you know? Yeah. Another service or another activity, like that. Is it a service or is it an activity? It's a service if it pleases Krishna, like that. You know? So many times I was in difficult positions like that, and different options are here and there, like this and that, you know. But then somebody told me one time, Prabhupada said, don't leave, don't deviate, right? Whatever you know you should be doing, okay? Many things I don't know, but this I do know, you know? Okay, so I can do this, you know? And I remember, actually, I was in the temple in Berkeley, same thing, a long time there, brahmachari, and always problems, you know? So a guru had fallen down, there was a flood. This is one thing after another, you know? And it's not my nature to be an administrator. So I was looking at this option. I can go here. I got invited to do this. I could do that. You know, I was like, you know, maybe this and that. But should I? Like, how can I walk out on the GBC people? They're counting on me. You know, so things are flowing here and there. And some devotee told me that. Prabhupada said, "Don't leave. Don't deviate." So what is my job? What can I do? And so I thought, okay, this is what I can do. I know I should do this and that. Okay, and then so forth, and so on. You know, and then as you're going on like that, what happens after a while is one of the options. It's no longer an option. It's just like, yeah, this is what I should do, you know. And then you change. If change is necessary, you know, Krishna will make it obvious, like that. Yeah, yeah, so on. Yeah. But of course, he also asks you. But you know, he's asking me now. You know, he's asking me what I should do. Mother Yashoda could give milk to Krishna, or she could take the milk off the stove. Two good services. So Prabhupada says a devotee is always being confronted with these choices in his career. And if we're sincere, Krishna within the heart will dictate to us which of the two services is the best. Yeah, for him, for us. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, there may be a lot of problems if you pick the wrong service. Yamal Arjun ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki. Akadasi Parayana ki. Maybe tonight somebody can talk about the three Goswamis.